Hi, I'm Becca Lewis, your host for the Shift the Story podcast, where we share tips and tools for making shifts in our lives from the inside out. This podcast is part of the Reality Shift series, where my husband Del Piper and I discuss ideas guaranteed to expand your perception of yourself and the world. This episode has a weird but true title: Why You Can't See What You Aren't Looking For. Everyone knows this because we have all experienced it, but how does it affect our daily life? How often do we apply this principle instead of the attraction principle, which will often lead us astray? In this podcast, Del and I cover everything from wide-angle vision to sweat lodges, the true dominion of the feminine aspect of each of us, and most of all, how to start looking for what you want to see. So come with me as we shift the story together. I'm Becca Lewis.
And I'm Del Piper.
And what we're going to do today is shift your perception, because that's the point of the reality shift, to take you from the small R reality to the big R reality. That's what we love to do, is point out to you the truth of being so that you can live your life the way it was intended to be lived. So we love creating perception shifting systems that you can use or implement in your daily life so that you can live your spirituality and the truth of being. So today, we're going to talk about, or we're going to answer three questions. Why can't you see what you're looking for? Why the attraction principle will always lead you astray? And why it's not that you have to work for it to see it. So you don't have to work for it to see it. Those are the three points we're going to cover today.
Yeah, actually, on that first one, you said, why can't you see what you're looking for? It's actually, why can't you see what you aren't looking for?
Well, that's what I thought I said.
And why don't we start with that? And why don't you...
Why can't you see what you aren't looking for, as
you...
I meant to say?
Yes.
Okay. Well, everybody knows this is true, because everybody's experienced it. Everybody has thought about something... decided that, well, we're experiencing it right now, so I'll use that as an example. So we are thinking about buying a house, and we haven't bought one together, and I haven't bought one since the 80s. So I haven't really looked at houses in terms of buying them. I've looked at houses because, oh, that's a cute house, but not really paid attention to the qualities of the house because I've never been thought about buying one. And we go down the same streets all the time. This is a little town. We drive the same streets all the time. So every time we started looking, as soon as we start looking for houses, I started looking differently at what I was seeing. And then I'd say, well, that house has a porch. I never saw that. Wait a minute. That house has a huge garage in the back. I never saw that. And every single day that we go down the street, I see something entirely different. I see houses I never saw before. Mm-hmm. I think they've been painted, and they haven't. I think that someone's come and cleaned up their yard, and they haven't. But that's all because I decided to start seeing houses. So before, I couldn't really see them because I wasn't looking for it. But everybody's experienced that in such a totally different, in so many different ways. Once I was going, years and years ago, I was going to buy a new car, and it was way back then when the CR, those little tiny CRXs came out, the Honda CRXs came out.
Yeah.
And I knew I was going to buy a new car, so I started looking at cars driving by, which you know I never do.
Because
I'm clueless what cars look like. And I saw this cute little car go by, and I said, oh my gosh, that car's so cute. What is it? It's my new car. And then I saw them all the time, and it was those little CRXs, which they don't sell anymore. And that ended up being my car and my favorite car I ever owned. So it wasn't that they went and made them. They'd already been on the road.
Right.
I just started seeing them.
You just became focused on that particular thing and saw more of it.
Yes, I was really focused on that. I was really concentrating my attention on looking for that. So if you're not looking for something, you won't see it.
Right.
And actually, that concept is useful in a human way.
Yeah.
Because there's so much information constantly blasting at us that we have set up paradigms and stories that we believe and say, well, this is all I need to know in order to get by, to survive. So the rest of it doesn't even filter in. And if it did, we'd probably be crazy. So we're only allowing, on purpose, a certain amount of information to filter in. The problem is that we've been teaching ourselves the wrong information to filter in.
Yeah, we've had a lot of temporal conditioning and training in looking at specific things. And so as we, you know, the tunnel vision syndrome, you're trained to keep looking at certain things and you'll keep seeing those things. And that's what this is about, is to show you how to see it differently, expand that vision.
And to really see what's true.
Yes.
Because even though we're talking about seeing things like houses and cars, it isn't the houses and cars that we want to see. We want to see the substance of what they are.
Yes. And we'll see things, you know, we're used to seeing things in certain places. They're supposed to be in certain places, so we get used to only seeing them in those places.
Right.
And in certain forms, like money. But like anything tangible or physical. There's a story of a fellow who went to a mall one day. He was doing mortgages. He was doing mortgages, and so he would always take his cell phone and he'd always put some pens and paper in his pocket because he never knew when he was going to be talking to a client and had to take down some information. He goes to the mall one day and he forgets his pens. He has paper with him, but he doesn't have any pens. He gets a call from a client who needs some information and has given him some information. He needs to write it down. He realizes, I forgot my pens. But instead of going, well, I can't write it down, he was standing by a planner. He looked over at the planner and he saw something sticking out of the planner. He reached over, pulled it out. It was a pen. He brushed it off a little bit, wrote what he needed to write, and said, I stuck it back in the planner for the next guy. In other words, he had developed and trained himself to get out of that rutted thinking that it's only going to show up in a certain place. It could be anywhere where you're at, and it's needed then, and there it was.
So that's the assumption he had come from, which is that if you need it, it's present now.
Yes.
And he wasn't looking for it in a specific form or a specific place. He just knew that what he needed was present now.
It's there.
And we always talk about perception, but just to do that quick little review of what perception is, there's two modes of perception, state of mind perception and point of view. And that what I just said about the assumption is a state of mind perception. We make the assumption, we come from the point of view, that whatever is we need is present now. So if we start with that point of view, then we are able to start seeing things because we're already looking for that quality that it must be present now. And this state of mind is not allowing fear or doubt or any emotion to come in to block your ability to come from your point of view, which is what he did. He didn't go to what a stupid person I am.
Right, exactly.
I'm going to look so dumb when I show up at this appointment with no pen. He didn't go to that state of mind.
Yeah.
He stayed in the point of view that what I need is present now.
Right.
And then was able to see
exactly.
It. So part of what we'll talk about today is what are you actually looking for and how do you see things. And that reminds me of a talk I heard recently. Mm-hmm. And we all talk about... we all have that little thing where you hold up a glass of water that's half filled with water, and then you ask, is this half full or half empty? And that supposedly tells your point of view. Actually, it's coming. What is your point of view?
Mm-hmm.
And I heard a talk recently where he gave two different answers to that, which I thought were wonderful because there is more than one point of view, and both of these other ones are actually accurate also. And the answer, the first one was this person who was doing the talk asked somebody else, well, is this glass half empty or half full? And the answer was, it's exactly the right size.
Oh, exactly the right amount, that kind of thing?
Yeah, it's exactly. This is how much water is supposed to be in it. It's exactly the right size for that much water.
Instead of going one place or the other.
I see. And then he asked another person who actually turned out to be a physicist, and he said, well, it's full. It's half full of water and half full of air.
Ah.
So another point of view. So it isn't just either or.
Uh-huh.
It's actually both of those were
really
saying perfection.
Which is really two-dimensional thinking. Yeah. We say it's either this or that. That's two-dimensional.
Exactly.
So
I love that because really both those other points of view were coming from that it is present now. It just depends on how you look at it. Mm-hmm. So, but we've had lots of experiences about different ways that people see things. That time when I was at the airport and came around the bend and there was a woman who had just spilled her coffee and was trying to mop it up with...
Oh, I remember that. That was so cool.
It was. She was going crazy. She felt so bad that she had spilled her coffee all over everything, and I didn't feel bad because I didn't spill the coffee, and I walked around the corner, and there was a big pile of napkins right in front of her, and I reached over and started dabbing up the coffee, and she said, "Oh, my gosh, they were there all along. I couldn't see for looking."
Yeah.
And that was state of mind. Coming from... If she would have come from the point of view that what you needed was present and not gone to the state of mind of how bad she felt that she spilled her coffee, she would have seen what was already present.
Yep. So she was focused on the mess on the floor, and that's all she could see.
Yeah, that's all she could see. And that she had been bad because she spilled, you know, then you say, "My bad." Uh-huh. And she would have said that if I would have, it would have been that time. So basically, the fact is that people have been told to focus on something. And then because we are told to focus on that, that training that you always talk about, you miss everything else.
Yeah, and each person has their own focus of how they've been trained to see certain things. That's why you look at it, you see some people who can make money like there's no tomorrow. It's so simple to them. It's very easy because they've had that training to see it and just know how it's going to be there. And to them, there's no question. And yet they lack in other areas that others might look at and go, "Oh, well, that's simple for me. I can have good relationships with people and that kind of thing.
I have a green thumb.
I can work in the garden.
I can design. Lots of things.
I can build things. I can do this, that, and the other." Because we come in with that training. But it's part of that. You focus on one thing, you become very good at that. And then to try to venture out of that tunnel vision area becomes very difficult. We don't see how to do it. Because we stay with that mindset, it's limitation.
Well, I know we're going to talk a lot about money today in different forms, but one of the things about money is, yes, there have been people who have been trained to see money in the form that we're talking about it, in the paper number form of money. But we've also been, those of us who may not have that gift, have also been told that those that do are wrong.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. And that's just as dangerous as saying I don't see money I don't see money and you see money and you're wrong. It's just as ridiculous, and it's also dangerous, but ridiculous, as saying you see beauty in a painting and I don't.
Right.
Making you wrong because you see beauty and me right because I don't.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow we've taken the quality of money, the qualities behind money, and said those people that see it and therefore have it are wrong, making ourselves right.
Right, yes.
When really, it's just a training. So in what we want to talk today about is how to train yourself to see the underlying substance of everything, and we can talk about money, but, and then you'll see what you need, just like the pen in the planter.
Be right there.
Because it is right there.
It is right there.
It is right there. And we just have to learn to be able to see. So you can't see what you're not looking for, but training yourself to look for it from a point of view, then you'll see everything you need in that moment.
Yes.
So that's what we're talking about today, right?
Yep.
Okay, so now, the next question is, why does the attraction principle lead you astray?
Well, you're attracting something from the outside in. And so you're again focusing on something outside of yourself. And instead of coming from that point of view where from within, you know, it's all there in that idea of the oneness of things. It's already supplied and furnished right there. It's just getting our old habitual ways of thinking and seeing things out of the way so you can see the evidence of it right there. It is like that butterfly story of, you look out at a butterfly, or the worm looks out and it sees a butterfly and it makes a comment about seeing that and wishing it was that, and the next one says, oh, how nice it would be to be able to fly around like that butterfly. And the third one says, oh, that's me. Because it's seeing the qualities of it and knows that that is inherent in it because it can see that quality. So we identify with the physical when we go, I wish I had that.
Or the attraction principle really starts from the wrong premise.
Which is?
That we're human and duality, some do, some don't, and there are times when we deserve it and times when we don't, and we have to be able to raise our vibrations, human vibrations, in order to attract what we want, when really it's not attraction, it's revelation.
Yeah, right.
So if we go to it seems so easy though, the attraction principle, you know, to talk about it, it's like, it is, it's the in thing, and it's been the in thing for centuries, but it's been the in thing in different forms to say, well, if I could just train myself, if I can become better than you at this attraction stuff, I could have anything I want, anytime I want. But it starts from the human personality and winner-loser.
Yes.
And duality.
Two dimensions.
That two-dimension thing. So it comes from the wrong premise to start with.
Yeah. Now, I'm reminded of Wallace Black Elk when he was teaching us about the Sweat Lodge, which he said, you don't call it the Sweat Lodge, you call it the Stone People Lodge because the stone people own that lodge. Now, see, that's a different premise altogether. They come from the idea the qualities are in everything, so everything is alive that way because it has a quality inherent in that thing. That's like an individual thing that shows up in that. So from the stone people aspect of things, he would go into the lodge and heat up the stone people, and he would see faces and things within the stone people of the bright redness that was there. And it would elicit a response within himself that he could connect with and be part of, and he knew it was part of him. So there's that oneness. There was no separation. It's all right there now. He just has to get the human sense out of the way so he can see it and understand what it's saying. And then he would talk about the altar, and in native terms, the altar was the earth. And the earth is that feminine aspect. So they said, always go to the altar when you're troubled with something. Pause and go to the altar. Now the pause is very significant because when you pause, it is like doing the countdown. You pause, it gets you out of that old mindset, that old way of looking at things. So you can go deeper within yourself and hear something, see something you've never seen before. Because on the outside, you're too busy looking at the things you've always looked at. You get out of that habit, out of that rut, you start to see things on a pure level. And the altar is that place of pure understanding. So when you stand there, you pause and stand there, you don't ask for something to attract it. You know, like, let's say, one time Wallace said he was in the sweat lodge and he heard, you'll be seeing, there'll be tumbleweeds coming. The symbol of a tumbleweed is dry times, dryness. So he said, what happens with people is, if they get a sense of that, they immediately go to the other and start praying for rain or wanting rain, give me more water, and then they end up with a deluge of water and could possibly even have drowning situations or flooding or different things. That's why the pause, because what is true in the pureness of things is it's equal, it's balanced, it's complete harmony. So you'll never get too much of something. It's impossible. It's only when you bring the human sense in from the outside of an attracted to you, you're going to get a lot of it, possibly, and maybe not the way you want it.
Well, it's back to that human ego.
Back to the human
ego. And being taught that if there's dry times, it must mean I need rain.
I mean the opposite.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The human slide between one side or the other, between fear and greed. The flip, always the flip.
And you always see those signs. You see people when they, just casual observation, you hear people, especially when you're in farming communities, oh God, we need rain, oh God, we need rain. And they may not get rain for a year or so, but when they get it, then they go, oh my God, there's too much water. We need some dry weather. We need dry weather. And then you'll see it flip back maybe in a year or two. It's always one or the other. It's never that harmony of, well, wait, let's stand in what is harmony and expect it, of course. it'll be completely balanced. It'll be perfect.
Well, when you're talking about Wallace, he never, even though he might not have said it this way, he didn't come from that he was human and then there were stones and then there were trees. He said everything was one.
Everything is one.
So he came from the qualities of divine mind or love, even though I don't know if he used those actual words. But it's he came from the point of view that he was one with each thing that he
yes,
saw.
Yes, and the training is so different. I mean, Wallace shared the way he was trained and brought up, and I'll show you a little bit of an example like that, because when Wallace was brought up and with his people, because they all united as one, they were all together, and they were training the young from the elderly people, and they talked a lot. And he said that when his old people talked, he always sat right in the middle, and he said he was just a little guy when he remembers the first parts of this. And he said he listened to them. And he said it was really hard to hear like an old man talk. And he said you had to have a lot of patience to hear those people talk. Because when they would talk from the idea, the motivation, the feeling. And he said the unsound that is around in the universe. Very important phrase right there.
The unsound.
Unsound. So he said they would explain everything to one understanding. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
They would explain everything to one understanding. Now, that's where he was brought up.
Right.
To go to that. Instead of always going outside of yourself to get something, work at it and all that. He said they would bring it all together, and when they finished, just one word would come out. Just one word. He said they might talk all day, and just one word comes out in the essence of it all. And he said the next day, he said they'd talk again, and then another word would come out. So for 3 or 4 days of talking, there might be just 3 or 4 words that would come out. But once you hear that one word, you hear it and understand it. And he said he'd never forget it because your subconscious mind would see and understand it. And that silent communication comes in at that point. And that's what we're talking about, that silent communication.
Which is, you're saying the unsound.
The unsound, that inner silence. Yeah, that inner silence that we talk about when we talk about doing countdowns and pauses and dirt time. You get out of that old mindset of, you know, and as the Chinese call it, the wandering mind, the stirring mind. You get out of that state of mind into that shining mind, that inner stillness, that quiet mind, that one pure understanding. And then you work from that place. And it comes from a place that, where the premise is pure, in pure understanding.
So it's almost laughable to think that he would have sat down in that quiet space and said, I think I'll attract more deer to the campsite.
Exactly.
I mean, that wouldn't even occur to them.
Exactly, yes. That's why when they would hunt in a manner that said, oh, we don't go out looking for a deer. We listen and go to the place where it's going to be. And then he said, we would just show up. And they were already there. And that's how we did it. We worked from the inside out.
So their point of view was everything is always present for
everything
what they
everything is present. If they're willing to go to the altar, the purity of understanding, and begin there. As time went on, they got confused and they got pulled out of that mindset and were forced to learn it from the outside in. And he said, we lost it all. And he said, the reservations became concentration camps. That's what they were, the Native people.
When you're that forced to learn differently.
Forced to learn differently. From outside in.
From outside in, which we're reversing now and coming mm-hmm. from the inside out. Well, I think the word altar is interesting because most people would associate an altar with a sacrifice. But that isn't what this altar
yeah,
is.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, again, as Mrs. Eddy talks about, you have to define the word spiritually, not physically. If we define altar from human sense, we get all that. It's sacrifice, it's this, it's that, the other. If we define it spiritually, it's pure understanding. It's that place where there is pure understanding.
It's not a place to try to bring ourselves to our human self to a human projected God.
Exactly.
It's a place where we become the understanding of God itself.
Yes, and so where can you find the altar of pure understanding?
And that's within, but that takes training. It takes the reverse of the training that
reverse.
We've already been done.
Exactly, and the Chinese say exactly that. You have to reverse the training. You have to go back within yourself. You've been trained temporally and conditioned that way to work and go more and more outside and differentiate things. Now you have to reverse it and come back within yourself.
And the other way that reason that perception paradigm thing works the way it works is because we think we're human. So if we're human, we couldn't possibly take all that information in because the human has to process it. But if we start it from the point of view that we're not human, that we're a spirit, we're their manifestation of God ideas itself, then there's no separation between all the information. It all flows as one. But if I'm a human, I have to acquire intelligence. I have to acquire knowledge. I have to keep some things away from me because because a human can't. It's like a human is a computer. Actually, the human is like a computer, but coming from the one mind, it's all there is. So that's that point of view changing the way that we're seeing things. But you always talk about how you can change. How you can see what's already, so we started with why can't you see what you aren't looking for, but then we talked about that coming from the right point of view, you always can see everything, even if you're not looking for it, it will show up for you in the way that you need it if you come from that point of view.
Mm-hmm.
But how, and then you said, but we've been trained to focus on this minutia. So how do we undo that? You talk about that wide-angle vision. Is that one way to do that?
Definitely one way to do it. It's a good start point, the wide-angle vision, where you can stand out. Well, you can do it anywhere. It's just a matter of using what modern people call your peripheral vision.
Yeah.
But you expand it even more, and you do the top and the bottom above your head and below. So that you're getting a 360-degree area in front of you that you're seeing. So you're seeing a vast amount without pointing and staring at one thing. So you're keeping your vision kind of straight ahead and maybe just above the horizon. And you're just seeing everything within that plane of vision because you're detecting something to your left and to your right and something below and above. And then you keep that. And when you notice a movement, and the movement appears at first to be outside of yourself, so it's a movement out in what looks like physical. You'll see a movement and you might want to focus in on that movement and identify it. And then you can go back to the wide vision, that very large vision. Now what this does is actually makes it happen on the inside, internally. You start to detect ideas and things within yourself as you do it outward. But it originates inward. Because you had to do what looked like a physical act, but only because you're used to doing these physical things of you're looking at one thing, you're either looking at this tree or that car or that computer or that light. You're always looking at something. When you get out of that, it opens up the inner so you can recognize what the inner sense of things is. And you'll see much, much more.
And then part of that is learning to not see the thing, but to see the qualities that make up what appears to be a thing.
Yes.
So seeing, when you see a tree, you see a tree, but the qualities that make up the tree are strengths and character and branching
and then each tree has its own particular qualities. The oaks are different than the maples, and the maples are different than the tulips and the cherries and the different trees. So they're all different. They all have different qualities. And that's the individual qualities of each thing. They're all equally important. There's not one more important than the other.
So if we train ourselves to see wide-angle vision and we train ourselves to see the qualities, then that would really produce the end result of what people think the attraction
yes.
principle does, but not making it coming from the dangerous dualistic point of view, but coming from the truth of being.
Yes, because when you have that two-dimensional thinking. You either get a lot of it or you get none of it. And it's very seldom you get a sense of that in-between, that balance of something. It's very seldom you get that. You're always in lack or you've got a lot of something.
Which is why everybody says everything's so good and something bad's going to happen. I mean, that's a saying. Or that person's really got a lot of money, but probably they're sick. I mean, there never can be the whole package in the human condition. It always has to be a piecemeal condition. And I was thinking about that idea, and I was because of the classes that we teach, I always give out a statement where you have to say an I am and then the absolute truth about something. And I was practicing one of those, and I realized that when you say an I am, in this case, since we're looking for home, I was saying I am home, it suddenly dawned on me how different that is than saying the contraction of I'm home. Mm-hmm. So we're so used to saying things like I'm tired, I'm sick, I'm hungry, but we use the contraction of it.
Yes.
But when you actually say the truth of something, you have to say I am, big A-M, I am. It doesn't work in the contraction. So it's a great little symbol of if you're saying I'm, you're probably not coming from the truth of being. You're coming from a human point of view.
Mm-hmm.
It's an easy way to catch yourself. I'm tired, I'm angry, I'm happy, I'm sad are all a human point of view. But if you say, I am happiness, then you are the idea of happiness, which is the divine mind in action. Mm. And it changes everything with that. And I experienced that recently when I went to the conference that a lot of people know I went to, and I was at the conference doing a habitual thing. I was making it all right for me to be there because I was thinking, well, this isn't really all about spirit. So here I am. I was at a marketing conference. So I was trying to figure out how I fit into a marketing conference when everybody else was there to learn how to get more money and more business. And that seemed so human to me. So I was doing, well, that's good, that's bad. And I was doing all this division of things, saying, well, that person doesn't know. And it was small, but it was definitely just completely going on to make myself feel like I was allowed to be there because I was spiritual. So I had done that little division thing and hadn't realized it. And then when I was doing I ams while I was there, and all of a sudden doing the I ams, I went, what in the world am I doing? I'm coming from the point of view that they're humans, and that I'm human, these are humans, that we're all coming from human need and learning how to get something. But if I stick with I am divine mind, then everything present is divine mind present. It's my perception that seeing them as people and right and wrong and good and bad. And then from there, it flipped to having a clear awareness that it was all for me. That the whole event I went to was for me. Everything was for me, which of course it was. It was all for me, as it is for everybody there.
Yeah.
It was all put on for me. And when I stopped making all those comparisons and making human division, it was so obvious it was all for me. And as is everything, is all for me and all for you, because there's only I am.
Right.
You have to get the feeling of that to really understand what I'm saying.
Well, while you were talking about that, I mean, that really brings home that idea of two dimensions. When you're thinking from a human point of view, you're absolutely in two dimensions. You either have it or you don't. It's either for you or it isn't. They're either the star and you're not, or you're the spectator. It's always either or all the way through. Wherein you leave that premise and go to an exact, pure premise of I am, then it's all there. Like you said,
it's all for me.
Every bit of
it. Every bit. Everything you look outside in the world is all for you. All of it.
And only that I am can interpret what it sees.
What it sees.
If you go to interpret it from a human point of view, you're back in the two dimensions.
Right.
And then again, you either got it or you don't.
Yes.
So it's...
But when you stay in the I am...
Yes, and that
it's only
which
that.
Brings us back to the idea of when you do countdowns, wide-angle visions, pauses, meditations, you're reversing the process of taking from a two-dimension to that depth of what is spirit and understanding, pure understanding. not a distorted understanding of, you know, because when we go male female, we're back in two dimensions, and the counterfeit idea of that is that it's separate. That's a counterfeit idea. Mind or oneness is never separate. So if we think of separation, and then in this particular, what looks like an outside human world, it's the male has the control. And so it's a further distortion
the
of what is true.
The counterfeit male.
The counterfeit male, because the authentic male, no way would ever allow that to happen. Can't happen with an authentic, because the authenticity of oneness is, it's equally balanced, and power is there in the oneness of it. And you lose that power when you separate it. It
right.
becomes distorted, and it's going to hurt something. It's going to damage something and destroy. And that's its whole thing.
Which is what kind of we've been talking about, but the third point that we were going to cover is why it's not true that you have to work for it to see it.
Yes, that's a counterfeit male idea. It truly is a counterfeit male idea. So there's an absolute even in the counterfeit, because that's absolutely false that you have to work for it. The oneness of pure understanding does not have to work for it when it's already right there.
Now that's different though. I mean, there's a clarity here that we should point out, that if you have to work for it, when we're using the word work, it's really from the context that people hear that word. It's coming from the curse in the Bible that the curse in the Bible is you leave the oneness, you're cursed. You have to work.
So it's
you have to work.
Yeah.
So, but when you go back to oneness, that curse falls away. And what other people call work is joy.
Yes.
And
we meet people all the time who are just thrilled about what they do. They love
it. I'm thrilled about what I do.
Yes. So.
You can't stop me from doing it.
Yeah.
I love it. So if someone says, my people say to me, well, you work all the time, because they're coming from that point of view that of the curse of work, that there is no satisfaction in that kind of work. You work to get money, you work to get a house to live in, you work to get cars, you work, 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 and it's the another day older and deeper in debt song.
Yeah, and they're trying to attract something into their life, into it.
Exactly. Yeah. So when people say, well, you work too much to me, they don't understand that I'm not coming from, I'm working to get that. I'm in joy of doing this activity.
And when you're attempting to, so people will attempt to attract the perfect job to them. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're coming from who you are and the true expression of that individual idea of spirit, if you're coming from within yourself, where you have that altar of pure understanding is right there, you can't help but express who you truly are. And then, of course, you're going to be doing exactly the type of work you should be doing.
And the way you get there is by whatever work you are doing. Find the truth of that work.
Yeah.
You can't say, well, I don't really want to be cleaning toilets, whatever the work might be, so I'm too good for this because I'm the I am. You've missed the whole point. You're really not the I am at that. There would have to be a way to wash dishes and clean houses and do any work that you find yourself doing as the joyful activity of divine mind.
Yes.
You have to do it where you are, not I'm running away, I'm leaving this today, and then all of a sudden my mindset's going to be totally different, I'm going to track the right work.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work that way. You have to go back to the one I am in order for what looks like work to switch to the joy.
Yes.
So it has to switch to joy first.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes all work equal.
Oh, yeah,
all
absolutely.
Activity equal.
Yes.
It doesn't matter what the activity is you're doing.
Yes. It is like Wallace used to talk about, the earth is the altar, or the earth is the altar part of it. You know, that's that feminine aspect. And then the stars are the ceiling, and there is no other power. So when you look at the feminine is the earth, the stars are the male qualities and principle of the thing. You don't leave one or the other. You don't go, well, this one's more important than that one. You have them both. It's a combination. It's a oneness of things. And so you can't distort it or separate it. Once you do, you've got trouble. You've got two-dimensional thinking, and you lose the whole idea. And then you start grabbing onto things. You grab onto the things outside of yourself to try to give you more meaning in life.
More meaning and more control.
Yes, more meaning and more control. And people get that false idea, the more I can grab a hold of and have, the more power I have, the more control I have.
The more fun I'll have, the happier mm-hmm. I'll be.
And the thing is, they keep looking, they keep wanting to get more and more. It's never enough.
Right.
And that is a very common thing about that in the false idea that when you go to that place, you never have enough. And you see the evidence of that all the time.
Yeah.
People never have enough of the external when they go to the false idea of there's separation, there's this over here and there's that, and that's what I'm in. And you go to the external sense of things instead of the internal.
Well, I know that working in the financial planning field for years, I saw examples of that all the time where I would have a client who really had plenty, enough, but often it was a struggle to get them to stop and say, now, stop now, because you have enough. You can actually live now, because they were geared towards, I've got to keep working and bring in more money because there's never enough. And we've experienced that where we had a consultation with a client and said, this is enough. You can stop now.
Oh, yes, many.
And the one in particular comes to mind who said, well, I don't know. I think I'll work another couple of years. When it was obviously clear that he was done.
He was done. He knew he was
and
done.
And he knew he was done.
The external, the outside influence and pressure that said, no, I got to keep going.
Right.
It's not quite enough.
And the end result of that was he did quit work, but because he was hit by a car.
Yeah, he was on a motorcycle and got hit by a car and really messed up.
Yes.
And so, yeah, he stopped working.
So he stopped working, but not mm-hmm. the way he meant to.
Yes.
Or was meant for him. So it doesn't. That isn't to say that you can't have a lot of money, but you have to come. It comes from the within, and then it is whatever. If that's the symbol that you see a lot of, that's wonderful.
And you will have enough. I mean, that's the thing. When you understand, when you come from that period of understanding, you realize you do have enough. It's only the outside influence of things that keep telling you don't have enough. You got to keep working hard. You got to get more. You got to get more.
Well, that's again that leaving the one. Yeah. And you talk a lot about that. You call what you call the boat people came over here to America.
Right.
And what was already here was the feminine.
Yes, we have to look at that in the purity of what was going on. People left a certain place because they were very dissatisfied with what was going on. They didn't like the tyranny that was happening there. So they left in search of a new way, a new understanding of life. They get to a place where that new understanding is there. What happened when... Because in this new land, the people had been through the bloodshed and all the fights and the conflicts, and they got to the pureness of understanding of what is the best government, with the symbolism of what is government, to self-lead, to lead yourself to oneself. And they had that intact, that the women were the council of power that would make sure the men outside of that who went out and did the things, did the negotiations, treaties, or whatever, they had to do it in idea of take care of everybody equally. We're all important. And if they didn't do that, if they veered a little bit out of that for their selfishness or whatever, the women immediately took them out of power. So here was that government. It was, they called it the peace. It was about peace. They found what it was within themselves, and they developed a government based on that. So here it is in this land. The people coming over on the boat didn't really want to hear it too much.
They couldn't see what they weren't looking for.
They couldn't hear it. They couldn't see it because they were used to tyranny. And the thing is, they brought it over with them on the boat.
Mm-hmm.
It was still part of who they were. They didn't shed the whole idea of that. That's over with. We have to listen to see what we find here.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't go to that inner silence.
They were escaping, but they hadn't found the inner silence.
So they were looking for something tangible to hang on to. So they saw land, and they saw trees, and they said, wow, we can make a living here, and then we'll decide for ourselves what's right for us. But they didn't go to that inner place of listening within, like I talked about how Wallace and how the Iroquois developed that silence and the listening within. That was predominant in their culture. You listen within. And so they didn't have that, and so they could not see what was there, right there for them to take.
Right.
When what parts they did see of the Iroquois Confederacy, they took some of it and put it in with the Constitution. They left out completely anything to do with feminine aspect and feminine power. They completely got rid of that. So they kept only the male principle of things. And of course, it became the counterfeit, because it has to. When you leave out the feminine, it's a counterfeit male.
Right.
And so this goes back to reflect each individual. You have to have both there for oneness. If you're acting like the counterfeit male, you've left out the feminine part of yourself. And so, of course, our culture has been raised, again, part of the temporal conditioning and training is the feminine doesn't mean much. Put it down. So, obviously, how long did it take for females to be allowed to even vote?
Right.
And they still don't have any power. Very little power. But it is changing. And, of course, as truth, we stand more in what is truth, it will change drastically back to what truly is.
And that comes in, well, the first thing, when you talk about how the boat people came over here and looked at the land and said, this is mine, M-I-N-E. But if they would have been trained to see differently, they would have come over here and said, this is mind, M-I-N-D, which would have changed everything. This is a better idea of the qualities of mind that we just left. This is freedom. This is independence. This is beauty. But they weren't trained to see that. But now we are. Now there are millions of people trained to come from within.
Yes.
And what I see the biggest issue of that is the feminine, what you're talking about. It's in the outside world, it looks like feminine doesn't have any control. But that's mostly because women don't give any men and women. Because women think, well, I am a woman, so of course I am. But they're not. Because most of us have had to learn a counterfeit way, counterfeit male and female way in order to get by, to survive, back to that survival. Mm-hmm. So women are just as bad at listening within to intuition and then acting on it as men, and I'm making generalities, as men are not listening to intuition and just acting.
Right.
So women know there's something wrong with the fact that men are just out there blowing things up and fighting over nothing. Women know there's something wrong with that, but not knowing what the true male is.
Yes, what do you do?
What do you do? So the whole redesigning or the whole training we're working with is the shift from the small R reality to the big R reality, so that women actually listen within first and then take action on what they heard.
Yes.
Instead of doing what the counterfeit male does, say, oh, you don't have a right to say that. This isn't a good thing. This is a bad thing. This is too much fun. In fact, I think that's one of the things that really we have to be re-understood is that if you're having fun in joy, you are in the understanding of God, not the work and suffer of the outside the understanding of God. So women who have that really clear sense of fun and joy and nurturing think that must be wrong because the counterfeit male
right.
works so hard.
Right. And make sure you know it.
Mm-hmm. So if as the each person and women say, oh, what is it that is the right thing to do? And then take action on that, trusting that intuition, everything will change.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's the point of view that there's only one. It's
yes.
The I am in action is who you are.
Yes. And that mind is there. It never went away. And it's just like that government of the Iroquois where there's that balance and harmony of the internal government. It never went anywhere. It's still here because there was a few counterfeit males who decided we're not going to go there. It doesn't mean that left. It's here. It's part of this land, this place, the essence of where we are. All we have to do is reverse the process of that outward thinking, only believe in what the physical eyes tell us. You know, that. I mean, how many times have you heard that? Oh, I only believe what I see. You know, if you don't see it, then it can't be true. That is, it's like Don Juan said, that is the dumbest stand anyone can make.
So if you can see it, it's only telling you what you believe.
Yes. And you have to interpret what you see from that pure place, that altar of pure understanding. Only, it can only be interpreted from there. And then you'll only see it as the qualities. Because spirit cannot be in matter.
Right.
It cannot be there. It's impossible for it to be in matter, because then it would finite the infinite, and you can't do that.
So coming back to the idea of money, if you see money, whether it looks like it's yours or theirs, you actually have an understanding of wealth.
Yes,
but when you say that person's wrong for having it, you immediately make it impossible for you
exactly.
to have it too.
You've just given it away. Whatever
you put
is
it in
yours,
the duality.
You've lost it right there.
Right.
And when you try to hang on to the symbol and make the symbol real, you lose the essence or the principle of what the symbol is. And then you lose it also.
And that's what you've been taught to do, is hold on to the symbol.
Yes, and then you always want more because you're not quite... Since you don't understand the principle, then you always are trying to get more and more of the symbol because you think that's real, that's it, and that's only the quality of it. You have to read and understand the principle. And then you have it completely. You can't ever lose it.
I think that it's really important to remember that it's the intent of the dualistic point of view to keep you from remembering who you are and from having anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's its intent. It's a malicious intent. It's not a passive, oh, well, if they have a nice life, it's okay with me. I mean, there isn't really two powers, but we've set it up in our thinking that there is. So that other power, that one lie that there's two powers, has a complete intent to keep us in lack. And so when we're casual about, oh, well, I'll get by, instead of really being intently diligent about switching back to the one inwardly to the one, we get sucked into what looks into the duality without even knowing that it's happening to us. Because there is only love, we think that everything must be coming from it, and not realizing there is an absolutely intent to keep us away from truth.
Right.
But it has no power, because as soon as you see that it's a lie, it goes away. So its only power is us believing in it. So what is one of the best ways you have that you could to get rid of that tyrant that I was just talking about, the tyrant that people are trying to escape? You know, how many times have we heard people say, I remember thinking this myself. In fact, I'll just say it from my point of view. I remember I was in a job where I was selling something, and I know I've told this story before, but I had a family that I was supporting, and I was working in a job, and I had to sell. I mean, literally, it was a sales job. It was straight selling, and I was really struggling with that idea of straight selling. And I was thinking that I couldn't do it because I wasn't allowed to do it. And I really had to switch over to the qualities of what divine mind was and what I was doing in order to allow myself to be part of the oneness. But we've been trained that we have to pay in order to get there.
Yeah.
You have to pay someone. You have to go through a medium. You have to pay money. You have to give it to a church. You have to, in order to get to back to that oneness.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I wanted to do in that situation was just leave it all. Like, wow, I wish I didn't have a family. I wish I didn't have money and bills. And I wish I didn't have any of it. I could just put on the robes and go live in a cave and get away from it all.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to be able to do that. I was thinking, well, I could do that. And then the idiocy of it struck me, because there is no way to get away ever from my own thinking. And so it had to be my thinking that shifted, not the world outside me. And I couldn't run. I was still going to be taking my thinking with me.
Right, exactly.
So how do you get away from that tyrant that tries to tell you that there's two?
Well, it helps, again, there's many tools to do it. There is the wide-angle vision. There's the countdowns. There's meditation. There's dirt time. Pausing is huge. It's... And as a symbol, you can look at the sweat lodge as a symbol again. When you go into the sweat lodge, you're going into a place where it's black. It's pitch black. So now you're not seeing physical things anymore. So it takes the idea of what you see out of the equation. You're not seeing anything. You have to go within. It's hot. The heat, what it does is it drives you even further within because you're uncomfortable on the outside. So you find a place of comfort within yourself. You start to listen more and more within yourself. The different things that are said within a lodge, depending on who is leading it, gets you to a place where you are listening within. It distracts that physical mentality, the rational mind. That's why it might do chants for different things. It just keeps that mind busy. So now you have an opportunity to listen within and hear more. I remember some of the first lodges I did, the guys would come in and want to sit right close to the center where the hot rocks were.
Prove their men.
They wanted to prove the manliness. Yeah. Like, oh, I can take the heat. And before long, they had their face to the ground and praying their butt off, you know, for, oh, God, oh, help me, you know, get me out of here. And it did. It just would eliminate that outward thing. And men need to do that more than women. When I told Twyla, who is a Seneca leader up in New York State, about sweat lodges, well, she knows about them, but she knew I was a leader, and she said, well, I'd go into your sweat lodge, Del, but I'm going to tell you what. If you make it hot, I'm out of there because I'm not going to suffer. And that completely changed it for me when I heard that. Because that's when I understood that feminine idea of things. The male counterfeit, it needs to suffer. It's part of its whole curse. Got to suffer. And it's going to suffer some way or another. When you're in the pure idea of it, there is no suffering. And then you don't need the sweat lodge itself. You have the idea of all you have to do is go within. You can do that with a countdown. You can do that in an instant. It takes some time to get to that place where you can do it quickly. It doesn't happen, you know, because we're so used to the training is so in-depth and rooted in us that we're coming from the outside in. It takes a while. So that's why you have to be gentle with yourself. It works sometimes. Sometimes it seems to not do anything. Be persistent. Be patient. And keep doing it. It'll get better and better. And you'll find yourself within a lot and listening from that place and acting from that place.
And of course, one of my favorite, two things that occurred to me when you were saying that is one of the things that I say to myself often that takes me out in an instant, which may not work for everybody, but I just say I'm not going to play. Because I can see that old temptation, the old habit come along, and it may look like a person or it just may look like my own personal thinking. And I say, I'm not playing that game anymore, and walk away. I mean, literally in my thinking, I just walk away. And if I don't allow the feelings of guilt or what's, you know, if I stay in the point of view, there's only one, then there's no feelings of guilt for walking away. And it works really fast for me, but it is a habit to say I'm not going to play, which doesn't mean I don't love. It just means I'm not playing that game. Like when kids are little and they're playing mean games and I'm not playing.
Right.
I'm just not playing.
Same kind of thing.
I'm walking away.
I'm not suffering.
Way. I'm not playing. I'm not going to be mean. I'm not going there.
Yes.
Thanks a lot. But I'm going over here. And that's the other thing that I really love about what we've been doing, which is the Women's Council. The other thing I think that really helps people to eliminate the training quickly is if you're in a group of people, which I know the council that you talked about, the Indians, if you're in a group of people who agree with the same point of view that you do and have the same absolute desire to leave the duality and go to the one, and with no fooling around about it, you know, like no iffy-wiffy, you know, traction principle, no airy-fairy, but truth, go back to that, and then you have those people supporting you and holding that state of who you are.
Progress is accelerating.
It's so fast, comparatively. It's just amazing. I know you had that one quote that Mrs. Eddy said about holding people, how she saw people. You just read it to me a second ago. So how she kept on, if she could continue to see people as they really were,
Oh, right.
And that's really what I think the council does. And we talk about restoring the power of womanhood. We're talking about womanhood about women, but we're talking about the restoring the power of womanhood within men and women.
Yes. Well, that quote from Mrs. Eddy was holding the right idea, and she said, holding the right idea of man in my mind, I can improve my own and other people's individuality, health, and morals. Whereas the opposite image of man, a sinner, kept constantly in mind, can no more improve health or morals than holding in thought the form of a boa constrictor can aid an artist in painting a landscape.
Exactly.
So you're right.
Find someone who will hold the right thought of yourself in mind as you hold the right thought of them in mind. And the more that you can get together into that, the faster the leaving of the duality.
And eliminates that tyrant within yourself.
Exactly.
Because that's the first place you have to eliminate is within yourself. It's kind of like rooted in there, and it has to be uprooted and thrown out, eliminated.
Well, that's a perfect way to leave this. Stick with what's true, find other people who say what's true, and don't leave it.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, the Big R Reality.
Absolutely.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us on these reality shifts. I know we cover a lot of material. Thankfully, these podcasts are always available for re-listening. What are you going to choose to look for? Knowing that where your focus is, that is what you will see. You know, what you perceive to be reality magnifies, or you will see what you believe. Choose well. If you have a moment, we would love to hear from you. We would especially love to see your review on iTunes. I'm going to go look for it. And when I see it, I will thank you personally for it. The most important thing of all is to remember that we are more than meets the eye. Till next time, let's keep shifting the story together.